Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. I know it has been a long time since you've heard this voice. It is now my privilege and my honor to officially welcome you back to the F4L headquarters. Yes, it is I, YouTube icon himself, and the leader of the F4L, as I said, Sean Jazz Stevens. I hope you guys are doing well. I apologize. We have been taking a little bit of a hiatus as we've been getting things in order, life events and such. We got a lot to go over today. We've got a lot of stuff going on, a lot of things to catch you guys up on. So Talk Tuesday may or may not have anybody call in tonight, but that's okay because, you know, I got to keep you guys up to speed. As it's been a while, so hope you guys are all doing well. Happy Tuesday. So, whew, where to begin? It's been so long. You know, just as I was about to get ready to do this, I was actually going to sit here and make notes of things I wanted to go over. And then I realized that when I was in the wrestling business, one of the things that, you know, set me aside from everyone else was the fact that I could go into a ring and not really have a written out script so much or a written out format. I was just able to, you know, work with, you know, the bullet points and just go from there. So I guess that's what I'm going to do because that's what I'm used to. That was when I had the in-ring talk show, the fitness center, and other things. So, but this is not wrestling. This is, you know, life. So. It has been a little while, like I said. So, again, welcome everyone to the F4L headquarters. I am the leader of the F4L, Sean Jazz Stevens, as I already announced myself. You know, hope you guys are all doing well. You guys had a great March. You know, I don't really remember the last show I did. I think it was my birthday show or something, and maybe a little bit after that. But, you know, since then I've gotten older. I'm now 41, as my son likes to point out. Yeah, and not a lot of changes. You know, everyone makes a thing about a birthday. Sometimes there are those who look at the birthday like, oh, it's a birthday. It's so exciting. And then there's those like myself who is like, well, it's just another day. you know, I'm just getting older and, you know, another day I defy the odds. And that's, when you look at it like that, I guess that's a little bit better than just, you know, getting older. So here I am. So let's catch you guys up with some stuff. So first of all, I want to do a quick shout out to Michael Fishman of the Connors. On Mondays and Thursdays lately on Instagram, he's been doing some live feeds, and he's been dealing with some stuff with the mental health thing and helping, you know, spread the awareness of mental health awareness, which, of course, I've always been a part of that community and trying to get the word out there and to erase stigma, which is something that, sadly, realistically, will probably never go away. There's always going to be that element of someone who will hate on things because they want to hate on things, you know, and whatnot. Recently, you know, because of the whole mental health awareness thing, and also, if you guys don't know, May is actually Mental Health Awareness Month. So in May for Talking Tuesday, we may, you know, dive into some more serious topics, not necessarily on Talking Tuesday, but maybe other days. We'll go into the mental health awareness type things. But Michael Fishman has been doing a good job holding things down on Instagram, and he's been doing big things on his own between, you know, working hard on the Connors and other projects he's working on, and, you know, being an awesome dad, a co-awesome dad, and everything else he's doing. And he's really a bright young man. I think he's really going to go places. He's already gone places, and I think he's only going to go even further. Because when you have heart and you show the F4L lifestyle and you live the F4L lifestyle, only good things can come. And I believe Michael Fishman lives those F4L ways. So good for him. And also, since the last show, and I want to apologize, last show I had, you know, we tried getting my friends, the Technical Work Rate Radio guys, Technical Work Rate Productions on. Unfortunately, this would have worked for them, sadly, but I was able that night to join them on theirs. And so I just want to let people, you know, kind of toy with the idea of maybe joining them and maybe, you know, partnering up with them, as I've been in the wrestling business for a long time. And these are guys who have, you know, respect for the wrestling business, despite what people want to think. They're trying to, you know, they offer a little, they look at things a little lighter and, you know, but they also, I think they come from a place where they're concerned because, you know, like them, I grew up as a fan, and I, you know, to see what wrestling has become has really hurt my heart a lot. I've been listening to a lot of other people via his podcasts and stuff. I don't watch current television on wrestling because it's out of respect for the guys in the business, still who I know. And, you know, I don't want my opinions of them to change or anything like that. So out of respect for them, I won't watch those things. Doesn't mean I don't want the best for them. Of course I do. But I just hope, you know, maybe things can get better. Hopefully, maybe. You know, Jim Cornette, who's a, you know, been a wrestling manager and a wrestling personality for many years. He's worked on many levels of the wrestling business. He started out as a photographer as a young man and then grew into a manager and then in the offices. And, you know, a lot of people don't like to listen to a lot of things Jim Cornette says because, truth be told, people don't really like the truth and they hate to hear someone say reality things. And, you know, when you're not massaging someone's ego, you know, things tend to go sour. People tend to not like those types of people. And they get a lot of heat for that. I'm someone who gets a lot of heat for my outspokenness about certain wrestling organizations and so forth. Again, I'm not watching any and I'm all set. But all honesty, I want to thank Jim Cornette and the people who actually watch these shows to keep me informed of what I'm not missing. And I feel bad for guys like Jim Cornette and other guys who are doing podcasts who have to watch this and watch what wrestling's become. So that'll be a little rant about the wrestling for now. I'm sure we'll come back to it later, as it usually does. Some fun news. Last night, my son and our two friends, my friend Rena's kids, who my kids are really close friends with them. In fact, my daughter is her son, so I get to torment him. I'm just kidding. But her two kids are about the same age as my son. Actually, they're the same age as my son. My son's 18, and they're about the same age. And they're really close in age, and they're really close friends. So they joined the bowling team on Sunday nights. We joined the Summer Bowling League. You know, I've been wanting to get back into bowling. I've been a candlepin bowler for most of my, you know, actually I've been bowling in an adult bowling league since I was about 15. Back then they had to make an exception because technically in the adult league you're supposed to be at least 18, and there were certain things I was excluded from because of my age. Like I wasn't allowed to do like state tournaments or anything because I was only 15 or 16, but once I got to be 18 or 17, I was eligible. And one of the things I always hoped for is when I had my own kids that I would kind of pass the torch and introduce them to bowling and hopefully they catch on to it. Little did I know that the kids would end up becoming kind of the takeovers of the group. And my son has a really good way of focusing, and he also has a way of, you know, he knows his stuff. My son does really well. My daughter is beast as well, even though she's not bowling with us this year. In the years past, she has. I think I told stories about that bowling league once. My wife is pretty decent too, but she's not. My wife and my daughter don't really like the whole competing thing. They like going bowling. For me, I've always bowled. I mean, I bowl for fun too, but I'm used to being a league bowler where, you know, every once a week you go down to the bowling hall, or what we call the house, and, you know, meet with everyone else, and you and your team, you go ahead and, you know, you as a team, you go ahead and bowl and you try to beat the other team. I'm probably a flaw. I'll give you that. I am very competitive, in case you guys didn't know. My wife, my kids will tell you that. I'm very competitive. and whatnot. But in the same sense, don't get me wrong, losing definitely happens. But when it does, I always feel like there's always something to learn from those losses. I always feel like there's always room to improve. Even if you do win, I feel like there's always some way of looking at it. And one of the things that bowling has helped me over the years, it's helped me in a lot of ways. For one thing, again, I joined a bowling league at a young age. I ended up joining with my uncle back in the day. And, you know, I got used to that. And then, you know, I, you know, grow in the bowling, you know, always candlepin, by the way. Candlepin, for those people who don't know, because I keep saying candlepin bowling, and I think most people have heard of, you know, bowling, but they usually used to what we call 10-pin. So let me just go over this right quick. So candlepin bowling, which is what I do, is kind of a regional thing. It's really popular in like the northern parts of Canada, and then all the way down to, you know, New England area of the United States. And outside of that, you usually won't see a lot of candlepin bowling. So that's kind of what I've always grown up with. But there's also 10-pin, which most people around the world are familiar with. That's the big balls. Candlepin balls are a little smaller. They're about the size of a bocce ball, for those people who've ever played bocce. But it's a little bit smaller. It's, you know, still heavy. There's no holes in it. It fits in your palm. And the biggest difference between candlepin and 10-pin, I find, and, you know, this is for someone who bowls, is where candlepin, you use a lot of your wrist and a lot of that kind of a movement, where in bowling, 10-pin, you use your arm, the entire arm you use, where in candlepin, it's more about your wrist. But the other third type of bowling is called duck pin. Now, duck pin is a very, very interesting game. break down this bowling thing right quick. And duck pin is kind of a cross between 10-pin and candlepin. With duck pin, the pins are smaller than the 10-pin. Say, you know, the 10-pin, everyone's familiar with a 10-pin bowling pin, right? That's the traditional bowling pin I think everybody knows. Well, what a duck pin is, it's a little smaller, flat, and it's kind of, you know, square, not square. It's still, you know, that shape that a pin is in, but only it's kind of smaller and flatter. So a lot of people say it resembles that of a duck. So that's where the duck pin comes from. And the balls they use for a duck pin are a little bit bigger than a candlepin ball. A candlepin ball is about maybe about 2 inches usually is how big a candlepin bowling ball where, and they probably weigh as much as maybe 2 pounds or so. Yeah, usually the most candlepin balls are about 2 pounds or so, 2-3 pounds, depending on what you like for size. Now, a duck pin ball is a little bit bigger than a candlepin ball. There's also no holes in that either. I believe in duck pin, you still get 3 balls like you do in candlepin. Candlepin, you get 3 balls per turn rather than 10-pin, we get 2. So candlepin, you get 3 balls. And you also, unlike 10-pin and duck pin, they also leave the wood until the whole box is done. So, and also you are allowed to use the wood as long as it's not in the gutter, because then you'll get a, you know, foul and it won't count. But if the wood is in playable lineage, you can actually use the wood that is what we call dead wood to pick up more pins or whatever. It's a lot of fun, and it's something I've been doing for a long time. I'll be honest with you guys, I'm not the best at 10-pin as much as I am with candlepin, because I'm more familiar with the candlepin than I am with 10-pin, where most people in the world are more familiar with the 10-pin. I'm sure if you were to try to adapt to candle, you'd probably find that more difficult. But, you know, it's all a preference. It's all a fun thing. But, you know, I'm really excited because we've been wanting to get back into bowling. Like I said, I bowled in the league for most of my life. And I always found bowling to be good for many different things. And this is also something for parents to think about, because I'm a parent myself, and I always knew the benefits of bowling. So let me tell you why I think bowling is really good for, and why it's, you know, can help out a lot of young people and so forth. And there are young tournaments, but there are young leagues for young kids, and there are also leagues for families and, you know, different fair leagues. You want to go to the local bowling house to see what they have for, you know, leagues if you're interested. But I always find bowling for a few different reasons. One, it's good to teach the importance of teamwork. And also, it's good for sportsmanship. And, you know, in high school, and when I played sports when I was younger, I was also, you know, credited for being one of the people who had the best sportsmanship on the, in the whole school. Because, you know, I always believed that how you represent your school or your team should reflect upon your whole school. And when you play another team or another school, you want to put the best foot forward for that school, for your school. And, you know, I won my school's highest sport award is called the Pride Award. Pride just means, it's not pride, but a lot of people are probably thinking it means. Pride Award is actually, pride is in the sense of, you know, school pride and team pride, school pride, and also showing outstanding sportsmanship and, you know, being there for your team. And I had a lot of heart for my team. I'm a diehard team player. I think teams are important. I think it's great for kids to be involved with some type of sports activity. I think it's great for formation of friendships. It's a great way to learn social skills. It's also good to learn. Sometimes you're going to have bad nights and good nights, but when you have a team, you have the ones who can pick you up and help you out. And there's so many different other, you know, benefits to it. Those are also some of the things I use in bowling for those reasons. I was a big brother for Big Brother, Big Sister for a long period of time. And one of my parts of therapy that I would include is when I would ever had a younger brother, little brother client, I would also put them on my bowling team as a way to try to get them integrated into, you know, becoming social. Because a lot of the kids who come through there, a lot of their issues were with social, you know, interactions with others, their age, or just, you know, trying to break out of their shell. I work with kids who, when we first started bowling, you know, they before even bowling, they were really quiet kids. And then afterwards, you know, you could never stop them from talking. They were really, you know, social butterflies. And to this day, when I run into these people sometimes, you know, they always thank me for, you know, the years of bowling and stuff. And again, it's a great way to, it's also good exercise. Granted, a lot of, it's not as, you know, physical as a lot of other sports. I think it's a sport that pretty much anybody can play. You know, and I've seen people of all kinds of, you know, different things. I've seen people in wheelchairs bowl. I've seen people in crutches bowl. I've seen people with no legs bowl. I've seen people young and old bowl. So, you know, it's a fun little thing. I think it's important to, you know, do those things. Now, this day and age, with everything going on in the world, one of the things I said is we need to get back to some type of regular activities. And when I looked around, I found out one of my old bowling houses, which is over in my old hometown, they actually had a league available on Monday nights. And I said, you know what, sign us up. Let's do it. My son's always my, you know, go-to sportsman. But also, he's also, like me, very competitive. My wife and daughter, not as competitive. They don't mind having fun, but, you know, when it comes to wanting to win for competitiveness, my son likes to do that stuff. And then, of course, you know, then you have to find other teammates. And, of course, you know, you make a few phone calls. I always find it's always so good. Whenever you're joining a new league, most leagues are always looking for new bowlers. In fact, the league I'm joining, we joined, is actually still looking for bowlers. But, you know, whatever. I guess they have 13 teams right now, which, as you can probably guess, that's an uneven amount. So what they'll do is they'll, you know, what they call a dummy team. They'll put a team out there of just basically numbers, and your team will bowl no one there, but you'd have to beat whatever the score that the house would give the dummy team. Some people like bowling that way. Some people don't. Some people like it. Some people don't. It is what it is. I'm used to it. It's a little different, but I personally feel I do better when I'm bowling against another human versus no one or just for fun. Now, because it's been a little bit since any of us have bowled, my son and I haven't bowled in the league in a little bit, and our two teammates, as I had mentioned, they have never done – they have done candlepin, but not like this, not this level, and also, you know, not a lot of – not really familiar too much with it, but, you know, it's quick to easy understand. It's quick to adapt to, and, you know, it's a learning process, and by the end of the – season, which it's a summer league, so probably sometime in August it'll be over. You know, everyone should be acquainted with it. My goal is to get kind of the kinks out so that, you know, when the fall starts, you know, we would, you know, probably join sometime in the fall some league there. And by that time, you know, we would have already made a name for ourselves, got all the kinks out. And if this is the team we're going to have, you know, in the fall, then so be it. And then we, if we win imagine, you know, we win the summer league and then we go and join the fall league and then we beat that, win that too. I mean, that would be nice. I mean, realistically, yeah, we could. But also realistically, there are also people who have bowled a lot longer, who are a lot older, who are more seasoned, who know how to kind of all the tricks of the trade, so to speak. The fun part about me is that I'm very inconsistent, but when I'm on, I'm on, and I'm also the clinch hitter. So what that means is usually what will happen is, you know, I'll have an up and down night, which means, you know, I'll have a good frame and I'll have a bad frame, and, you know, I mean, not that crazy, but still. You know, I first started bowling, like I was telling the kids last night, I had like a 60 average. That's another thing, you know, you kind of acquire an average, how well you do every week. And another good thing about, you know, the bowling thing, as a side note to what I'm talking about, is, you know, watching your average go up or down can also affect, you know, the person too. If it goes down, obviously you want it to go back up. So it gives you motivation to improve and, you know, figure things out and move up. And you know, it's kind of cool. And I always find it's easier to have a low average going into a league than it is to have a high average and just go down. And, you know, because that happens. I mean, I know, you know, me personally, that I don't know what it is. I usually don't bowl in between a league. So this is my first time bowling in a summer league. Usually I bowl in the fall. But because of everything going on, we didn't join one last year. We were kind of late by the time we figured out we wanted to do that. So we wanted to jump on the summer league so we can get a little, you know, dip our toes in the water, so to speak. I also wanted to find out, you know, what kind of a team we can put together and whatnot. So there's a method to my madness, believe it or not. And a lot of people, you know, look at, you know, how I run the team and how I treat the team and whatnot. And I like to think that I like to try to think that, you know, that's how everyone should be for their team. You know, give them help when they need it. Give them encouragement when they need it. Don't be a total jerk because they have a rough night. When they have a rough night, remind them that there's still, you know, 3 to 4 other people who are on the team that can help them out. Everyone has a bad night. No one's perfect. And it's just, you know, it's always important to let people know that, you know, we're a team. It's a team sport. There's no I in team. Of course, you know, you're going to have the bowler who's going to be usually the higher bowler who has the higher average, so he's going to have a lot of pressure on his shoulders. But every person on the team is important. And as I like to say, and, you know, like I told the kids last night, that, you know, every pin counts when you're bowling in the league, you know, and that is true, you know. When you're bowling in a league, what they do is there's usually 3 strings. And in the 3 strings, what happens is, you know, they average up your scores and you see if you can beat the other team enough. Sometimes they have a handicap, depending on what it is. A handicap is just like little extra pins they give someone who might be a I mean, if you have, let's face it, not everyone's going to be, you know, top-notch bowlers. What they do is they give a couple of extra pins just to make it semi-even, because, you know, when you have a bowler who's bowling an 80 versus someone who's a 60, you know, clearly there's a bit of a size and, I mean, number and, you know, experience level. So what they do is they give maybe one or two pins to make that even. And sometimes people can get bent out of shape over that handicap. And sometimes, you know, it's, you know, what is what it is. And sometimes that handicap goes down. I was on the league several times where we didn't even have a handicap because our averages were high. If you have a high average, then you're going to give out a high handicap. If you have a low average, you're not going to give up much of a handicap at all. So there's that too. But, you know, they just do it to make it even, so it's a little bit more fun for everyone, more inclusive. But that doesn't mean that you go easy, and that doesn't mean that, you know, it's in some type of an advantage. It's really not. Technically, all it did is make you even with the person you're bowling. So if your person you're bowling bowls like a few pins more than his regular average, then he's going to beat you. But your job as a bowler or any other sport is to beat your bowler. You know, depending on how many people are on your team, like our team, for example, this league we're in is four people. I've been on leagues that, you know, there's been five on a team. You know, five is usually the most I've ever seen on a bowling team. It's cool to have that, you know, but I think four is just as, you know, depending on who your team is, you know, you have to have, I feel that it's important to really have that connection with your team. Even if you're, you know, new to whatever you're doing, can be really applied to any sport, really. I just feel that, you know, teams are great for people, and any kind of a team sport's a wonderful way to, you know, learn a lot about yourself and also to, you know, help things, you know. There you go. So I've been talking with the kid. So, yeah, we had our first night last night. We bowled for averages because our friends' kids didn't have, you know, the bowl in the Candlepin League before, so they had to bowl for averages. We had to bowl for our new averages because we haven't bowled since forever anyway. So next week will be the real bowling test. And as I understand, there's 13 teams, like I said, 14 if you count the dummy team. That means, you know, we have to beat 13 other teams. 14 is a lucky number. So I think they might have just gave us the win anyway, just because they made it 14 teams. See how that works? So, anywho, that's the way I look at it. Wishful thinking, right? But, yeah, should be fun. Looking forward to it. And I'm hoping to, you know, I'll have updates for you guys on whenever, Tuesdays or whatever, to keep you guys updated on that and whatnot. Maybe we'll have the team on to talk to you guys and tell you guys about it. All right. So, what else? Oh, fun stuff. So, I got vaccinated the other day, finally. a lot of people are up in arms. A lot of people are on the debating side of things. Should I do this? Should I not do this? People like, oh, you know, all these other things. And here's what I got to say. The quicker we can all just, you know, get these things done and whatnot, the faster we can get back to somewhat life as we knew it before all this nonsense. That's all I'm going to say. Usually, as you guys know, I don't talk about current politics. I don't talk about any of this other stuff normally. But I can tell you, I got vaccinated the other day. It was literally nothing. All honesty, I also have a little bit of a higher threshold of pain than most people, but it was nothing. It was literally a shot in the arm, and it was over. and then where I got it done actually at one of the football stadiums, which is kind of cool. And, you know, I just went outside on the little observation deck, took pictures from the floor thing. You can actually go on my Instagram if you want to see those. You can see my pictures from where I got my shot. You know what? I got it done because the quicker we get things done, the better. Live by example. So I got vaccinated, so I can tell you there's nothing to it at all. If you had a booster shot or a flu shot or anything, it's nothing serious at all. It's nothing crazy. So nothing should really keep you from it. There's a lot of people out there who give a lot of false information, and a lot of, people who believe a lot of the things that aren't true, and a lot of the people who are like to, you know, doubt the, you know, this whole, you know, thing, whatever. You know, I don't know if it's going to, I guess we're going to find out if it works or not, because I already did mine. I got my cool button, too, so that matters, but there you go. So, there's that. Let's see what else we got. So, Mother's Day is coming up next month, which is in May, and I guess it's May 9th, so, you know, happy early Mother's Day, by the way, to all those mothers out there, in case I, you know, I'll be on here way before that anyway, but just happy early Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. You know, May 9th is actually, if that is Mother's Day this year, would actually be one day prior to, it would be 10 years I lost my mother. As you guys, as I've told before, my mother was unfortunately, you know, killed in a hit-and-run accident a number of years, 10 years ago, on May 10th, 2010. You know, and, you know, I'm not one of those people who gets really sad and stuff like that. I don't really, I've not cried since I was 10. That's a true statement. I mean, I don't feel emotion. I do. And when it comes to my mom and just thinking of the things that she has missed out on the last, just the last 10 years alone, it really would have been nice to have my mother at my wedding, that we finally tied the knot, my wife and I. It would have been great, you know, for her, you know, to see the kids grow the way they did. And, oh, my gosh, I could just see my mother and my daughter, you know, oh, my goodness, the world couldn't handle it. My mother was a hellraiser, and she would teach my kids how to be the junior hellraisers, and then she'd hand them back to me and say, here you go. My mother was a trip, as I said before. She was something. Not your traditional mother by any means, but, you know, and then she's not the perfect one either. I mean, she made mistakes along the way, but no one's perfect. And I'm just thankful and grateful that I was able to forgive her before her time, before she passed. And I was able to have that relationship with her prior to her passing. My mother wasn't always a constant in my life, as I said before. My mother and I were separated when I was about 10-ish. And even before that, I was already raising my brothers and my sister at 9 because she wanted to take a break from being a mom. You know, and we went to school with my step family. That was a, you know, bad thing for me because it was a toxic environment for me. And then, you know, I finally got emancipated. We already know this story. I got emancipated. I lived alone, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when it comes to my mother, I'm remembering the first time she came back after 11 years of being missing. Now, granted, a lot of stuff's happened in that 11 years, you know. Hadn't seen her since I was 10, or whatever, however old you are at that age, about fifth grade. And then I didn't see her till years later. So it was about 11 years, I guess, the last time we saw my mother. I remember I was having a, I was being promoted at a video store, which you guys may have heard of, called Blockbuster. Google the kids. Blockbuster was the place you went to go rent movies before Netflix existed. And actually, if you watch that, you'll find out how Netflix started. Anyway, don't do that. Anyway, the Blockbuster, I was having to promote. We were celebrating the fact that I was getting promoted to Blockbuster. I was, you know, becoming a manager on duty. Oh boy, no, but I was younger then. I was probably about 20, 21, and I've been on my own up at this point for quite a while. And I was also in between wrestling at that time and, you know, doing all these other things, working at Blockbuster for the, quote, day job. And then also as a Big Brother mentor and everything else I was doing. I'm a very busy person, in case you couldn't tell. I don't stay sitting very long. I like to do things. I like to get active and I like to, you know, get stuff done. I don't think that talking about things helps anything. Just do it. That's how I feel about things. That's why I've always kept myself busy. But anyway, Blockbuster, in like any other job, I put 100% into everything. And they promoted me after about a month and a half of me, you know, working the blocks, and promoted me to a manager on duty, which was cool. To this day, the fan bit, the customer base that we had then, now Blockbuster has been done for actually longer than my mom's been gone. Blockbuster's been gone. I think Blockbuster's gone for what, 20 years? No, I don't even know. Hold on. Let's find out. I'm going to find out when Blockbuster closed, and that will tell us. 1 second, folks. I'm going to find out for you guys. See what I do? Let's find out when Blockbuster closed. Okay, so Blockbuster closed on September 23rd, 2010. They went out of business. Okay. So, yeah, a long time ago. About the same year as my mother died, but anyway. Regardless, this is going to be longer than that, to be honest with you, because remember, I was at Blockbuster up until this point. Anywho, as I was working there, it was a young job I had, and I was obviously old enough to work there. Considering I was emancipated, I was already old enough to work there at 17, technically. But, you know, formality, it was as it is. So as I had this party and everyone's having a good time, there's a knock on the door. Now, it was never an uncommon thing. We were living in an apartment building with other people. Someone might come to the door, hey, one of your guests move their car or whatever. And I'm always respectful. I leave all my neighbors alone. And that's the thing about me that may be shocking. And I don't want you guys to think, you know, too poorly of me. But I always came from my grandmother really taught it to me, really embedded me in it. And it's kind of like, it's very simple. Just mind your own business. That's all it is. If you have neighbors or whatever, you can say the occasional hi, hello, how are you, hello, goodbye type thing. But and don't take this personal, anybody who I'm ever neighbors with or anything else, but I traditionally don't talk to or get involved with a lot of my neighbors, any apartment building I've ever lived in ever, and I never probably will. I'm living in a place now that has multiple people here. The only people I talk to is my wife and the staff. People who run this place. That's about it. I don't talk to anybody else because it's something we were always growing up knowing, and I always feel like it's better just to have that boundary there. And, so that's that. But, you know, so it was not but on the same sense, you know, if a neighbor came in the door, knocked on the door and said, hey, you know, can you move one of your friends move their car or whatever, that was something that, you know, wasn't like that was an uncommon thing. So I go to the door to, you know, answer the door to get to find out this person. And when I go to the door, there's this woman standing there with this little kid. And she goes, don't you know who I am? I'm your effing mother. Let me in. Because first I said, can I help you? Because, you know, that's a nice thing to say, right? Can I help you? She goes, I'm your effing mother. Don't you know who I am? I'm your effing mother. Let me in. Is her words after 11 years of not seeing me. And there you go. There's my life. That's introduced you to my mother right there, the person she was. Blunt and to the point, comical, which I thought was funny anyway. That's kind of how she operated. But needless to say, that was my mom, not some, you know, one of my neighbors telling me to move the car. And there's a few mysteries here that have never been solved. One is, this took, when she came back after 11 years, no one had seen her or heard from her in a number of years. Supposedly no one had talked to her in that number of years, but yet she knew where I lived that time. Now you might say, well, you know, just, you know, Google it or something. But the thing is where I was living was my second apartment, and I've already moved from another apartment. She never came there. So the question would be, how did she know where I lived? Who told her where I lived? You know, if no one talked to her, how did she know where I was? And which apartment's mine in this whole apartment complex? So you know, that's a mystery that will probably never be solved. Actually, can never be solved, because the only one that can answer that is no longer here. But when she first came back out of 11 years, of course, there are a lot of feelings, a lot of talks that had to take place, a lot of healing on many levels, on different avenues. The one thing I've also learned in my lifetime is that sometimes you have to listen to the other person, and sometimes you have to look at all of the things and step back and look at the whole picture before you can judge someone else. And push came to shove, she was still my mother. And push came to shove, if it wasn't for my mother, I wouldn't even be alive. I know that sounds cliche. You might say, well, you know, you still didn't have a great young life, and she's a lot of responsible for that. And that might be partially true, but on the same sense, she's all, if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't even be here, because no one else wanted me either. So she fought, you know, a lot of things to keep me, if you know what I mean, back in the early 1980s, was frowned upon when a single, you know, 16-year-old girl would become pregnant. And that's kind of the scenario that it was. So keep that in mind. But anywho, Mother's Day is coming up. I don't want to go too far into this whole thing and make it a sappy thing. I don't want to make you guys upset or anything. But, you know, every two times of the year is kind of what I feel it the most is my birthday, oddly enough. My mother had a habit of calling me every single year on my birthday at 3 a.m. because that's when I was born. It didn't matter, you know, what I did the night before, what I was doing that day. It didn't matter if I was sleeping or awake. 3 a.m. on my birthday, the phone was going off. My mother was calling me to wish me a happy birthday. That was always a thing through, you know, the time we got reconnected and prior to that. So that's something I don't get anymore. No one calls me at 3 a.m. and that's kind of when I feel, you know, that. And then also, you know, I feel like it's important to tell your kids the stories of the grandparents. I think it's important, you know, for our kids to know, you know, kind of who are the people that make up our dynamic. You know, how did I get to where I am? And, you know, but the other thing that's kind of sad to me is that I know that if my mother was alive today, she would have a blast with my wife and kids. And unfortunately, when she passed, she died a little sooner than we had hoped, that she wasn't able to really get to know her or the kids. And that makes me sad, because I think that, you know, I think that, you know, she would be the person that, actually, then again, maybe I should, you know, I'm saying this jokingly, of course, but that's just how I deal with things. But then again, maybe it would be such a great thing, because my mother would also show them how to get in trouble and how to get out of it without us knowing. So maybe it would be a good idea for my mother to, you know, hang out with our kids. But I'm just kidding. But my kids, you know, I think would have taken a lot and learned a lot from my mom. She was kind of the fun mother that everyone always wanted. You know, and sometimes a lot of people look at that like, well, you know, she should be, you know, the adult and, you know, take ownership or whatever. And towards the end of her life, she did try to reach out, and she did try to try to replace a lot of the bad feelings she had with everybody. Not with everybody, on both ends. Like, I have two brothers, and I don't deal with my sister anymore, but my brothers weren't as accepting of her as I was. So, you know, they weren't so quick to forgive her, and I don't even think they ever did. But when my mom passed, my brother Eddie, I feel had some guilt about the fact that he had a grandkid too at that time, and she could have met her. In fact, his wife at the time wanted them to meet. She thought it was also important for the kids to know their grandparents, and that's something I would have loved for my kids to hang out with my mom. I also would be also afraid of that too, which new thing that she'll teach them. In all seriousness, that, you know, I think it bothered my brother that he wasn't able to do that when he could have, because, and this is the thing you got to take away with these types of things, is you can't take these things for, you know, time with these people for granted. Life is a very, very special thing, and people are on the planet for a time, and It's important to embrace all of the time as much as you can and live all of your life as much as you can. That's one thing my mother taught me, is to never have a dull moment. And if you don't like something about what's going on, then fix it. If you're not, liking however this is going or that's going, then do it. Do something about it differently. My mother taught me to stand up for myself, to be kind of not outspoken, but speak up for myself, not let other people, talk for me or at me or anything like that. And, to have a voice. And then also she taught me, that sometimes there's people who are weaker than I am, that, or people who can't talk, who want to but can't. And then that's when people like myself need to step up and be their voice. And that's something I've always done. As Mother's Day approaches us, I kind of hope, I believe in a lot of the supernatural stuff as far as life after death, heaven, hell, whatever. But what I do like to think that my mother, whoever she is, looking at me and is proud of me. And hopefully she, has a tendency to watch over the kids and, be proud of the people and whatnot, be proud of, the son that she raised. And I'm just happy that I was able to, kind of mend things with her before she passed. But my other brother, who felt badly about it, he kind of felt so bad that he ended up taking over a lot of the funeral kind of arrangements when she died, because I honestly feel it was his way to say sorry that he wasn't there when she was alive, didn't make the effort when he could have. And my mother did try to reach out to both of them. And my other brother's not been ever receptive of it. That's his choice, and you can't be really mad at him either, because he was young when it happened. And also he was living with my stepfamily, who, for lack of a better term, would tell him kind of how they were and how she was, because he was too young to really remember a lot of my mom's stuff. That's unfortunate, and that happens, because I've seen it happen. I've heard it happen. As I said. So there you go. but anyway, happy Mother's Day to those mothers out there, and know that, I know a lot of mothers might think, well, it's, my kids don't care so much or whatever else. And if you have mothers out there, for all those people who are listening, who are in a situation where you actually have a living mother who you can talk to right now, by all means, make sure you make all the effort you can to talk to her now, because, oh man, if I could only pick up the phone and call my mother sometimes. We're going to a concert, the family and I, in July for my daughter's birthday kind of a thing. And I can just imagine what would happen if my mother found out, if she was here, what she would say. We're going to see, by the way, we're going to see Motley Crue, Def Leppard, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and Poison. My mother wasn't the oldest mother either. She liked a lot of music anyway, and a lot of those bands. So if I was to tell her, hey, we're going to this concert at Fenway Park, and this is who's going to be there, my mother would probably piss and moan until she went too. And it didn't matter that she was in a wheelchair and oxygen and all these other things. She would still try to go, because a few times I made a mistake of letting her know I went to see Metallica without her. Metallica, my mother. She was upset she couldn't go. I kid you not, this is who my mother was. But anywho, anyway, anyone who has mothers, show appreciation to your mothers. Of course, on the flip side of that, in June, we have Father's Day. I know for my wife, on Mother's Day, we have some stuff, for her, but of course, because she's not too far away and she's kind of an earshot, I can't really go into detail on what we're doing for Mother's Day. Father's Day... No, it's funny how this works. I look at Father's Day kind of the same way as I look at my birthday. But in the same sense, it's probably the most meaningful one, and the one that brings me the most pride, and the one that makes me the most prouder than my birthday even. As a young kid, one of the biggest things I ever wanted is to have my own family, to raise, have kids and raise the kids and show them, the upworld way, and, mold them and guide them. Keep them safe and keep them happy and keep them healthy and teach them along the way. That's what the father does. And a lot of it's heartbreaking when you don't have that relationship. Speaking from experience, I grew up without a father. I had a stepfather who was not really around. And, you know, there'll be other guys who would step into that role, but he didn't have the dad. I think it's important for that relationship to be there too. And I think a lot of people put a lot of emphasis on Mother's Day, which they should. But I think it's important to recognize when you have a father who actually acts as how a father should, you know, a father who shows up and does the things he should be doing. And by the way, being a dad, I'm going to tell you this too. One of my biggest things movies is one thing. I get movies are movies, but I've heard people say, well, I put food on the table and I have a roof over your head and clothes on your back. You know, I'm your dad. And that's what I do. And that's all I need to be. This day and age, I'm going to tell you that being a dad and being someone who who's both probably tell you, I'm pretty decent at it. Actually, a lot of the kids I was a big brother mentor would probably tell you I was pretty decent at it too, even though I wasn't their dad. But my kids alone would tell you I'm pretty good at being a dad. But I can tell you this too. There's a lot more that goes into being a dad than paying bills, going to work, putting food on the table. Because guess what? You can be a damn good dad and not even have food on the table or a roof over your head. If you think you're a great dad, but what about those homeless dads who are keeping their kids safe, who are going to work trying to, you know, trying to find something to get their kids into a home, to get their kids to school, keep the kids healthy, safe? Because there are a lot of that too, but people don't look at that. So again, people take things for granted. You know, fuck on, we don't have to worry about that. But in the same sense, there's more than goes into being a dad than just the name and, you know, paying money. That's kind of the old kind of the way of looking at it. Dad's the one that goes, gives you the money. Dad's the softy or the hard one, depending on who it is. Dad gives out the discipline, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? A couple things. One of the biggest things I was looking forward to being looking forward to fatherhood is I wanted to shatter those expectations of what a father should be and do what it was. There's no instruction manual for raising kids. Everyone knows that. That's an old cliche that everyone knows. It's a serious job. It's a job that's 365 days a year and 24/7. That's your job. You can go to work for the top level of any executive, or you can work for a cab company. You can work for Domino's Pizza Pie and deliver pizzas. If you have kids, your first responsible thing, your first job is being the dad. Then everything else just goes along with it. I know you might say, well, you know, you have to have money to have kids. Well, yeah, you do. But if you have kids, then you work your job around your kids, not the opposite way. And I speak from experience. I am one who has kids. This is always something I strongly believe in. My friend Michael Fishman, as mentioned earlier, he's another one. He's someone who has a similar thing. He likes spending time with his kids too. And I honestly don't understand why or how people can have kids and not want to be part of their lives. But that's up to them. That's their kind of choice. But if there's any fathers out there who know they have kids and maybe thinking, well, should I or shouldn't I, do it. If you have kids, that's like an amazing feeling to know that you're raising someone. Be there. Sometimes just going there to be part of someone's life is all they need to get by in life. You know, when I was doing the martial arts as a younger kid and when I was doing the sports in high school and everything else I was doing, I didn't have anybody in the stands watching me do any of those things. When I was doing the combat sports, my grandmother would come to see some of the tournaments, but that was my grandmother, and she liked fighting. But that was a different scenario. My mother really didn't go, and a lot of other people did either. But I think for a kid, when they have that kind of interaction, when their dad's there, and he knows dad's in the stands or dad's on the sidelines. And your job as a father isn't to sit there and poke your finger in your kid's chest and tell him to do better. And also, it's not your job to tell the kid, well, you got to be the athlete to make money for this family. Because it's not your kid's responsibility to take care of your family. It's yours first. And there's a lot of family, there's a lot of people out there who seem to think that, you know, these kids are the ones who are supposed to be the breadwinners and so forth. Now, being someone who's worked in the film business, I worked in the film business. I've dealt with the, quote, stage parents. Anyone who's ever worked in film on the production side of things knows what this is like. But also, what I want you to step aside from is look at the kid's life. How many stories have we heard from Hollywood about these tragedies have happened where the kids have, you know, been forced to do roles or forced into the childhood or the stardom to take care of the family? That's never a way it should be. Now, Michael Fishman is a different story. He wanted to go into acting. He liked acting. He liked being part of that thing, and that's a different story versus, you know, say Macaulay Culkin, for example, who I don't really think he wanted to do any of that stuff. He didn't want to do that stuff. He did it because he was forced to by dad. And, you know, his dad wasn't able to be a ballerina, so he became a ballerina. He made him a ballerina. Then he wanted to be an actor. His dad couldn't do it, so he made him become an actor. And then his father tortured him all the time, which no one talked about and everything else. And they wonder how Macaulay Culkin gets his label that he's so messed up. I don't think he's messed up. He had a screwy life childhood like I did. But I think he turned out all right, to be honest with you. And by the way, not that he ever listens to my show. Shout out to Macaulay Culkin, by the way, for joining Fatherhood, by the way. Speaking of upcoming Fatherhood in June, Macaulay Culkin is going to be joining the Dad's Club as he just, him and his wife or girlfriend, I don't know what their real relationship is, but him and Brenda Song welcomed their new baby into the world. So congratulations to Macaulay Culkin on becoming a dad. And you know what? Don't listen to what anybody else tells you. Just do what you think is best. And do the opposite of what your parents did. That's the best way I can tell you. That's the best advice I can give you. And also, while I'm doing that, I think this is either his first or second year. My good friend Dan the Man Peter, the anti-bullying advocate and the spokesman for the Empire and all the other things, the incredible things that Dan Peter does. Former MMA fighter and WWE superstar, tough enough winner. He is also a dad, also welcomed his new baby to the world not too long ago. So welcome to the club, so to speak, gentlemen. I'm hoping in June that we're going to get some dads on the show the week of Father's Day to actually talk some dad stuff. I think it's important to celebrate the fact that what a club it is. And also, we do it for two reasons. One, I think it'll be good for new dads or people who, you know, maybe what is it like to be a dad or how does dad work? You know, I've been a dad for, well, my daughter's 19 now and my son's 18. My daughter's going to be 20 in July. My son's going to be 19 in November. So welcome to my world, folks. And then I raised my two brothers and my sisters on top of that. So they got that. But, I'm hoping to have some people on, some fellow dads, the week of Father's Day, so we can kind of chat some things up and whatever. And maybe swap some dad stories. Because, you know what, I don't think there's enough that goes in about the dad stories. Plenty of dad jokes. Oh, my. You know, and, I think it'll be a fun time. So I've reached out to some people, waiting to hear back from them. So, hey, maybe someone will come in. Maybe they won't. Hard to say. All right, moving on. I got some TV movies and reviews and so forth. I guess I could throw these in here real quick. I saw the new King Kong versus Godzilla, and I saw the new Mortal Kombat remake. Oh, actually, both of those remakes. And what else did I see? We'll do movies first, I guess. Kong and Godzilla, we'll look at two movies. How about King Kong, Godzilla, and Mortal Kombat? We'll look at both of those. Now, I always look at things in two different many different ways, actually. Because I think I've explained to you guys before, when I do a movie review, when I watch a movie or television or anything else, I don't actually just sit there and watch it. This is just how I do things in general. I always escape from where I am, and I look at – I just dissect the whole entire movie as I'm watching it. And I critique it the whole way through, and then I kind of analyze it the whole way through. I can't just simply watch a television or a movie show. So there you have it. Let's do King Kong vs. Godzilla first. We started on HBO Max because we have the HBO Max. I bet it was probably better in the movie theater, honestly, if you can find one open. I know movie theaters are opening. A lot of things are opening again, and I think I am going to try to go to see some other movies that are coming up in the theater. But just for convenience purposes, King Kong Godzilla, as well as Mortal Kombat we watched here and on the HBO Max. I thought that was a pretty cool feature. It was kind of nice. So King Kong Godzilla first. Admittedly, I didn't see 2014, I guess. Is that the one that kicked off the Godzilla one? I didn't see that one, sadly, because I just had a lot of going on and I missed it. But also because the last Godzilla movie I saw with Matthew Broderick was terrible, so I didn't want to really do any of that. But to be honest with you, as a kid, one of my favorite movies growing up was King Kong vs. Godzilla. Now, it was cheesily made. I knew back then it was a bad movie done. The guys in the suits or whatever it was just epically comical, to say the least, to see these two tyrants, King Kong and Godzilla, the two biggest, baddest monsters on the planet, duking it out in the worst fighting I've ever seen in my life. And, but you know what, though? Cheesy as it was, and as comical as was the original, it was still something that I always cherished. I thought it was an epic thing. I said, oh, they put two of these big things together. This is crazy. There was always the, you know, myth that there was two separate endings. There is two separate endings, but, you know, we were always led to believe. Now, I live in the United States, and, you know, the old wives' tale was that in the United States, the version we saw, King Kong won, and then the version that Japanese people saw was the Godzilla one. That's not true. That's just a little added extra scene, or an extra sound, I should say, versus the other thing. But anyway, so the new one we saw, I did see the Godzilla King of the Monsters. I took my wife there to see that in the theater when, you know, things were normal again back then. I didn't have a problem with that. I was a big fan. I liked that. That was pretty cool. Truth be told, I like all kinds of movies, but my grandmother was fans of the old feature double features on the TV channel. So we used to show them on the, you know, Saturday, Sunday movies. They show like two of these, I guess they call Kaiju movies. I guess they call it. I didn't know they had a name back then. I used to do King Kong, Godzilla, Mothra, Gauguin, and Monster Zero, all of those things. And, the Flying Turtle there, and the Rodan, and all those. We used to watch those all the time. Again, my mother would laugh throughout the entire thing, and that's kind of how I was experiencing it. But I saw that. The King of the Monsters, I saw the King Kong Skull Island, both were doing pretty well. So I actually had high expectations for King Kong versus Godzilla. I did not think it was going to be a failure at all, and I actually believed it was going to be pretty much straightforward and exactly what it was going to be. And what do you know who won the pony? It was exactly what it should have been. King Kong Godzilla fight, a little break, they fight again. That is a draw, and they're going to team up. It seems like Deadpool might have been directing King Kong versus Godzilla, maybe. That's a Deadpool joke for those people who read the comics. Deadpool likes to break the fourth wall, and whenever he has a fight with somebody else in Marvel, he always ends up teaming up with them at the end. And one of the things about Deadpool in the comics, he always references himself knowing he's a comic, and knows what's going to happen, and he usually says in these verses series, kind of funny, but anyway, King Kong versus Godzilla, pretty decent. I got to say, though, the only issues I really had wasn't King Kong versus Godzilla. They had a little girl who apparently could communicate with King Kong in sign language, which I got to tell you, I was kind of popping when, you know, King Kong actually spoke sign language. And sorry, spoiler alert, by the way, I should have said that already. But, you know, it was a sweet moment. It was really cool to show that King Kong knew some sign language, because historically speaking, it has been known that you can teach a gorilla sign language. As I remember as a kid, I used to learn about a gorilla called Coco that could speak in sign language. So that wasn't something I was foreign language for me. I knew that was something that could happen. It was also kind of cool for people who are hard of hearing or deaf that, you know, they had something like that, a character like that. I thought it was kind of cool to know that God, the King Kong, can speak with you. Anyway, Godzilla, the special effects look fantastic here. Not like the original. You know, granted, I'm not a big fan of the over CGI with clear, of course, with King Kong Godzilla, you know, that's all it is CGI. You know, then, you know, there's another one, another monster pops up. It wasn't the monster I thought it was going to be, but sure enough, when I saw the beginnings of it, I said to my wife, I said, oh, I know who that is. And then she doubted me. I don't know why she ever doubts me. But anyway, turns out I was right again. It was the epic, the other Godzilla, put it that way. So, yeah, it was a decent movie. It was exactly what it should have been. King Kong, Godzilla, a lot of fun, a lot of action. Nothing too serious, nothing you don't know what's going to go into. I will say some of the supporting cast I could have done without. Some of the side stories I could have done without as well. There was a side note with like some conspiracy guy who was teaming up with Billy Bobby Brown, who apparently has been in all three of these, I think. And then some other, and actually the kid from Deadpool, oddly enough, was in this as well. And it was cool to see him outside of Deadpool doing something else. I thought he was really cool, funny to do it anyway. I like that. But I'm not clear about what their relationship is, these two. I don't care, because all honesty, I thought they kind of took away from the rest of the movie. I don't think they were necessary where they were in the second, in the King Kong versus, in the King of the Monsters, definitely Billy Bobby Brown's character, as well as, you know, everyone else is part of that storyline. I think that was, they did much more role, they needed that there. Where this one here, it kind of like they forced their way in there. Not that they forced their way in, but they felt that they needed to have these characters come back just because, you know, people need them there, and kind of invented something for them, because I don't feel like they fit with the rest of the movie. Little girl doing the sign language, that's fine. The woman who, you know, is, I guess, the caretaker of the girl and also, you know, more or less the protector of Kong, so to speak. It was a pretty decent action movie. It was King Kong versus Godzilla. Go see it. Wasn't bad. Probably won't regret it as long as you like fighting movies. There you go. Speaking of fighting movies, my wife and I saw a trailer for Mortal Kombat, the new one. And being someone who, you know, it's probably one of my favorite games of all time, probably the only one I can actually still play. My wife also plays Mortal Kombat, so, you know, double winner for me, I guess, huh? Anyway, my wife and I were anticipating this movie. Now, granted, the old one, the original Mortal Kombat movie, came out a number of years ago. It got a lot of heat. A lot of people didn't like it and whatever. And this one here, a lot of people had a lot of hype behind it. It had a lot of hope in it. Let me tell you the trick to how I approach this movie. I went in with no expectations whatsoever. Because sometimes when you go into a movie like that, it's a little easy to accept or not accept things that are going on in it. I didn't really read into a lot of the, you know, the subplots of the movie or the storyline, whatever. It's Mortal Kombat. I feel like it kind of writes itself. They would have characters of some kind from Mortal Kombat, you know, and there were. A lot of people who I've seen are, you know, complaining about a character they had no idea who it was, which I say, who cares? you still had a lot of the quick ones. I mean, you had Goro, you had Sub-Zero, Scorpion, Liu Kang, Wow, Shao Kahn, Shang Tsung, you got Jax, you got Sun, Noobs, I mean, somehow Cabal showed up. So a lot of people complaining, oh, well, there's so many other people that could have intertwined. Well, I mean, all fairness, you know, what did you want exactly? What did you expect there to be? You know, it's an action movie. It's not going to be a very long movie to begin with. And the most action films aren't very long in general because they know, you know, primarily their audiences lose interest if there's no action. This movie doesn't have this action throughout the entire movie. From opening scene to the end scene is action. So, you know, and unlike the first movie was kind of PG-13. It was very much, you know, definitely a PG-13 movie. This one was rated R, and it was definitely a rated R movie, which Mortal Kombat should be rated R. People who are upset because their kids are seeing, you know, fatalities done in this movie are also the same parents who probably, you know, wrote Sega and made them put the M rating on, you know, the Mortal Kombat game back in the day. It does not mean anything. It's just a rating system. Whoopee. Mortal Kombat's Mortal Kombat. It's nothing no one knows about. If the kids are going to see the movie, they know what Mortal Kombat is. If they have good parents like me and her, then they've played it. My kids are Mortal Kombat masters. Anyway, you know what? A lot of people hated on the movie. I'm not going to hate on the movie. I thought it was all right. I didn't think it was. I went into the movie not having any expectations, and it actually worked out because I didn't get let down. And if anything, it exactly did what it should be. It was Mortal Kombat. It was exactly what Mortal Kombat movie should be. It was violent. It was action. It was a minor storyline, I'll be honest with you. I've never played any of the story modes in Mortal Kombat. So, you know, maybe I'm missing a lot of those types of things. But I just like fighting each other. And the fights are epic. Oh, well, this one's here and that one's not here. I'm like, who cares? You still have people. I think people these days are entitled to what they want. And if they don't get everything they want in the first shot, then they're going to hate on it. So, which, by the way, do you think that, you know, depending on how this movie does, of course, you know, there's also room for, you know, more, because we all know, you know, gosh, now everyone loves the trilogies, the sequels, the prequels, or whatever else, you know, so there's nothing saying that this isn't the foundation that's going to spring into more people coming in and so forth. In fact, the movie very much left it open door. I'm not going to spoil that for people, but the options there and the doors open for that such thing to happen. So that's what I'm going to say there. So that's my review on Mortal Kombat and King Kong versus Godzilla. Because Dave Meltzer does a star rating for wrestling, and which is a movie thing, which Jim Cornette invented and Dave Meltzer stole from him. Instead of doing that, I'm going to, I don't know, what do I have, fours? I'm going to give them each a four, maybe. I'm going to go to a system 1 to 4 rather than a star rating, and I'm going to say it was all right. I think King Kong versus Godzilla, it had its ups and downs. But it was straightforward. It was exactly what you'd expect from the movie. I think it ended exactly the way it should. And the same thing goes for Mortal Kombat. It was exactly what I expected it to be. I didn't expect it to be anything because I went in without any expectations. So I was a little surprised. There were some people who I would have hoped would end there. There was one character who was in it. Now, I wasn't fond of that, but they gave it to my character. I'm not going to complain because they gave me something I wanted. That's kind of ungrateful of me. If they had a character who I liked and I saw them in the movie, I should be thankful that they had my character in the movie, not, oh, that's not how he's supposed to look. Makes you look like you're ungrateful. So there you go. And I don't want to do that.
I personally would like to see where it goes forward. I think there should be a two. I hope there is a part two or a sequel of some kind to that. I think as far as the King Kong versus Godzilla, I think that is the time to hang it up. I think that is the way to end it. And I think that Monster Universe thing has served its course. I have to be honest with you guys. I know that, you know, in theory, of course, the kaijus can go on forever. But personally, as far as this, you know, universe goes, I think that this is the perfect way to end the movie with King Kong versus Godzilla. I think it's the perfect way to, you know, tap off the whole series and done. Where Mortal Kombat, I kind of hope they go with another one just to see what else they can do. Can they do what they did the first time? Will they continue with the R rating? Will it be continued to be violent? And that's what Mortal Kombat is, and that's what it was supposed to be. That was what was advertised. That's what we all have come to know of Mortal Kombat, so you shouldn't be surprised by any of that. So there's that. So there's some movie reviews for you, some TV reviews. Let's see. What do I watch on television? Let's see. See, I'm trying to give you guys reviews on TV shows or movies that I've not reviewed yet. I feel like I'm very boring because I don't watch a lot of television. I do watch television. It's always the same thing. I can talk to you about The Conners, I guess. I watch The Conners still. Conners is still killing it. I still like it a lot. A lot of people don't like it because, you know, certain people aren't there and whatever. But you know what? The Conners is kind of one of those shows that it's kind of like, for people like myself, it's kind of like I look at The Conners like, you know, a reminder that life is bad, but it can get better. And also that, you know, this is kind of how I grew up. I watched The Conners and a lot of those shows growing up. In all honesty, those are the shows that kind of molded me to become who I am. I know a lot of people say they can learn a lot from movies or whatever. A lot of people, like a lot of parents, will blame the movies and the television for influencing their kids. I guess in some ways, then, I guess movies and television helped me. Because when I see shows like, you know, like The Conners or Roseanne or various other things, where everyone else always saw the negative things in these shows, all the comedy types of things, I always noticed little subtle things and the real underlining message in the episodes. Sometimes maybe those weren't the messages, but that was what I took from it. The Brady Bunch. I took a lot of influence from the Brady Bunch. Now, of course, I know no one could live the Brady way because that would just never work for anybody. Nor would I. These are the shows, the places I learned on television to mold me to who I am. That's how a family should be. And that's kind of how I look at things. But, and I also, you know, I'm glad The Conners are on. And, you know, I wish there was more shows, you know, more of these sitcoms out there. It seems like every time they come out with a new sitcom type of show, it lasts and then it goes off the air after a year or two. There are some people who, I don't know what it is. They can't stay on a television show, or the minute they add someone to a television show, it's over. Let's see. I mean, oh, I can say this. So Netflix has Magic for Humans this season on Netflix. I can tell you this. You can go check this out. So they're doing a Latin one. The person who's a magician, I don't know if you guys are familiar with what I'm talking about. So Magic for Humans is kind of like a regular guy who does music, does these insane magic tricks. But he does them with like regular common Joe. So picture like it's kind of a cross between like Candid Camera and, I don't know, Mind Freak, I guess. I didn't watch Mind Freak, so I wouldn't know what goes on in the show. But basically, the guy goes around and does magic tricks for people like who are walking down the street, or, you know, sometimes he. But each of the magic tricks that he's doing are all, you know, tied to some type of message, like whether it be about love, about fear, about, you know, resentment or about various different things. That's kind of what the show's kind of centerpiece is about. It is in Spanish, but it's got subtitles. I've never, ever had a problem reading a subtitled movie or a television show. If a movie is good enough or a television show is good enough, I have no problem reading subtitles. You know what? He's a likable guy. He's funny. I apologize. I can't remember his name. But he's kind of funny, kind of edgy. The Last Magician. And he's in Spain doing a lot of these, you know, trick stuff. It's kind of funny to see. You know, growing up, you know, magic was something that a lot of people thought about. And kind of like wrestling where you knew there was a gag, but you didn't know where the gag was coming from. But you also didn't secretly want to know either because you liked to have that element of surprise. And I think, you know, sometimes it's good to kind of look back at things like that and unwind and watch something simple like that. I think it's, you know, plus you can hear these little unintended messages in here and see how these magic tricks are developed into real stories and stuff. The Good Doctor, Freddie Highmore. I'm still watching that, and that's still epic. I also, let's see what else. Oh, I have to tell you this. I have been trying to get into other older shows that everyone talked about. Currently, a friend of mine recommended, again, Game of Thrones. Those of you guys who, I mean, if you lived under a rock, maybe you don't know what Game of Thrones is, but I'm pretty certain most of the world have heard of or already watched Game of Thrones. Notoriously, I'm always late to the party for everything. But, yeah, so I watched like the first probably 3 seasons in one night. Can I do that? But you know what? I got to tell you, I don't know. And I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of these Game of Thrones people mad at me or whatever. But you know what? I think because I've seen The Walking Dead as long as I have, there's nothing that's on that show that I haven't already seen on The Walking Dead, other than the fact there's no zombies per se. But, I mean, other than that, a lot of people watch the Game of Thrones for the shock value. Like, oh, I can't believe this happened or that happened. But to be fair, I was always a Walking Dead fan, and that's part of the reason why I couldn't watch Game of Thrones. It was on Sundays. I believe it was on the same time as Walking Dead. The same thing goes for Sons of Anarchy. It was also originally on Sundays. And I remember we had a challenge, my family and I, for the, you know, Sons of Anarchy and The Walking Dead. But no one in my clique watched the Game of Thrones thing. But I'm willing to give anything a chance, right? So I watched, you know, the first 3 seasons. And just to get an idea, what is this? How bad is it? And I realized there's really nothing different that I haven't seen in the other thing. It's just, you know, set in the time period of, like, you know, the knights and the kings and all that stuff. And, you know, it is what it is. I just feel like there's nothing there I haven't seen before on The Walking Dead or anything like that. I think maybe that's desensitized me in some ways. A lot of the things a lot of people talk about, well, there's this episode and that episode, but I'm like, okay, but, you know, I don't know. But anyway, I also wanted to add that I'm trying to catch up on The Walking Dead. That's impossible almost to catch up to The Walking Dead, but I'll get there. And apparently it's going off next year. It's all done, Walking Dead. After numerous years on the TV, and I get it, and I know a lot of people have already jumped off the bandwagon a long time ago. To be honest with you, I used to watch every Sunday like everyone else did, to not go on Facebook until I've watched the episode, because we all know what happens whenever anything like that happens, and whatever else. I don't actually go on Facebook at all anymore, but that's just the old way of doing things. Then I didn't go on Facebook at all until the episode was over. Or I've seen it. But, you know, coming to an end next year, and, you know, maybe one of these episodes will, you know, have like a Walking Dead conversation. I'll get some of my Walking Dead buddies to come on and talk about The Walking Dead, what it's mean. Kind of like a post-mortem before mortem. You know, one thing they can say about this that show is they put a lot of people, a lot of talented people on the map. And I know a lot of people don't want to get typecasted as being in from just The Walking Dead, but, man, if you're known for something, why not? I mean, can Norman Reedus go to something else and never not be called Daryl Dixon ever again? Now, I got to tell you, Andrew Lincoln, I mean, I know I'm sneaking in another film review sort of, but Andrew Lincoln, I just saw in a movie called Pinguino, I think it was called. It was basically about a penguin. This kid found an injured penguin, and his family had to take care of it. And Andrew Lincoln, oddly enough, was the father of this kid. And the mother was kind of ill, I guess, and whatever. And it was set in Australia, which makes sense. And, you know, it was a nice family film, but it was nice to see Andrew Lincoln doing something that wasn't just, you know, Rick Grimes. But, you know, also I've seen Andrew Lincoln do other things prior to me seeing that movie. I've seen Daryl Dixon before he was Daryl Dixon, too. But, I mean, one of my favorite Andrew Lincoln, you know, movies was Love Actually. I know that's odd that I like Love Actually, but you know what? That's a star. That movie, Love Actually, has probably the best cast of Britain's greatest talents in one movie, I got to tell you. I don't think there's anyone bad as far as acting goes in that film. A bunch of them have won Oscars since then, and they're all fantastic. Andrew Lincoln was in that movie, probably wouldn't even recognize him. But as far as The Walking Dead goes, I mean, we're going to have to – maybe I'll have some buddies come on here. Maybe we'll get some of the people who've been on the show to come in here and talk about it. I can do that too, probably. Also, I'm trying to reach out, and we're going to probably bring on the promoter of the Monster Mania convention, because apparently in May they're going to be having their first outdoor event, and it'll be the first, like, you know, convention type thing ever happening. So I'm going to try to get our good friend Dave Hagen to come on here, and he can tell us about Monster Mania Con. My family and I are all geared up and ready to go for Monster Mania in August. Hotels, rooms booked, tickets set to go, and ready to go. Just give us the green light, ready to come. It'll be great to see everyone, and I regret we will not be there in May, unfortunately. But we will see you guys in August, I hope, in Cherry Hill. And I urge everyone to keep safe and all that stuff who are going, and have fun. And I miss everyone there, and I hope to get to see all my Monster Mania buddies and brothers and sisters. And, you know, Monster Mania is like the unofficial family reunion for all of us horror fans and whatnot. So that'd be cool. So there's that. I guess we have 31 minutes. So let's bring you up to speed on the YouTube stuff, I guess, my YouTube show that my son and I showed. By the way, since then, we've had our Hall of Fame show. We've built our Hall of Fame arena. The last show in March, we actually had it in the all-new Jazz Hall of Fame of Class of 2021, which is our first class. We're going to do this thing where we're going to add plaques every year, but when we realized the new game's coming out, we decided maybe just make the arena, and then we'll just do the arena every year until there's a new game. That's kind of how we'll do it. There'll be that every class. But my son's been on the show a few times. Nice to, you know, sometimes get the, it's nice to have, you know, the father-son dynamic back on, on Jazz and Son's dream matches. But, you know, I got to say that the shows are really taking off. And some good stuff coming up. Just to give people a little bit of a preview coming up, though. We have a show scheduled on May 4th. That'll be the first show of May, which is a couple days. And there's going to be a lot of debuts and a lot of returns. So if anyone ever wanted to know, you know, how does your creativity go? How creative can you get? You want to go to that show and whatnot, because there's going to be some characters that are coming up that – you would think, I don't know what you would think, but I can tell you where I have the people who are based on actual, you know, Dream Masters and Women Warriors of Wrestling, we also have some original characters that I'm like, what happened to me? What is this? But again, make sure you tune in on our YouTube show on May 4th to see some of these returns and debuts. All right, there's that. But also want to give you a couple updates that since our last show, we've had titles changing all over the place. We've had new people coming on the show debuted. Our current women's social media champion, the lovely Duchess Lana King, has the show, you know, beginning of March, I think, or middle of March, and by the end of April, she was already the social media champion for the women. So good for her. I'm very proud of her and very happy for her. She's a, you know, a filmmaker and a terrific young lady who is in real life, but is also on the wrestling show, is dominating the women of the show. And she's really excited about these things. So it's really nice to hear that she's really getting into her character. She's like, you know, yelling at the screen, get up, and really throwing herself out there. I said, well, congratulations, you're a wrestling fan. Because that's kind of how wrestling fans are, and that's kind of what it is. Also, our young Russian soccer friend, Yesenia Berkovitz, number 13, he's had his birthday just about a day before, a couple of days before mine, even though we had a birthday in the same month. But anyway, I had sent him, and along with some other our Dream Masters, their own copies of their best of DVDs, along with the copy of the entrance music for our show. If any one of our show guys have not gotten one yet, let me know and I'll send them over to you guys. Just hit me up on wowdreammatches@gmail.com. wowdreammatches@gmail.com. And yeah, we can. I can send you guys out, you know, your best of and the copy of the entrance music by our amazing superstars in Wind Warriors Wrestling. Another thing that came up was Brock Brun returned after a long period of time. I got to say, he was probably one of the most pop-cultured favorites people ever when we first unveiled him a few years ago. And he was what we call the unpredictable Brock Brun, because sometimes he would get dressed, sometimes he wouldn't. He acted very bizarre, and he didn't do a lot of the things we told him to do. We told him to get dressed, he'd come out nude, or vice versa. He was the bad boy. And Brock of course, formed his, you know, social outcasts, which at that time was made up of, oh boy. But yeah, Brock Brown has made his return, and on the title has changed hands three times for the Dream Masters. And actually, bad news is the last show you got, Brown is actually a new current reigning Dream Masters icon champion, after defeating the former champion, now Alex Vincent. Well, granted, Alex Vincent's going to get his rematch. Is he going to want it, though? That's the question. Brock Brown is an original, that is for certain. Of course, we also have other ones, too, like I said. And I'm proud of everyone who's on our show. The Schritzel Fight Club, amazing two young athletes. Leo the Bull Curtis, our MMA Grand Prix champion for a number of months, dropped the title to Brandon the Crow Lee, whose dad just got put in the Hall of Fame back last month, who made his brief return to Dream Masters to challenge for said title. And, you know, he defeated Leo the Bull Curtis for the first time since December. But fortunately and unfortunately, Leo the Bull Curtis showed the drive, the determination, and showed what happens even if you get a loss. You go in, you work even harder the second time, which he did. And Leo the Bull Curtis pulled up the biggest win probably in his younger life, defeating the legendary Brandon the Crow Lee. So good for him. As Leo the Bull Curtis, again, your MMA Grand Prix champion. Sonny Berkovitz is up there doing the big things. Jackson R. Scott was our champion for a while. Amos McNamara, Michael Fishman, all those guys doing big things. You gotta keep tuning in to the show. Also, our friend JoJo the Bodybuilder, who's been dominating on the YouTube on our show, but also he's going to be doing a bodybuilding competition in real life, too. So make sure you go follow JoJo the Bodybuilder and support him, too. terrific young man who puts a lot of time and effort into everything. That's all these guys do. And you got to be proud of these guys. You got to support them because, hey, you know, sometimes with a little bit of encouragement, you'd be amazed what that could do for someone. And I'm someone who believes and knows that if you put the work into something, you can get anything done. A lot of people didn't think I was going to become a professional wrestler because I came from a poor background. And I was homeless at the time. I was in high school. But, excuse me, with hard work, dedication, and no quit, I achieved that. And then I wanted to be in the filmmaking business after I got injured. Did that. I wanted to help people. I got a human degree, a degree in both things in college. Again, don't let other people define you. You define yourself. And that's one of the biggest things I can say. A lot of people would doubt a lot of things that I said I would do. Everything I said I was going to do, I have done. And I still have much more to do. I'm not quite done yet. So keep an eye out for more things. Ah, boy. And again, the Technical Work Rate Radio guys, we're going to get them back on here. Actually, get on here the next time. But also, I hope to rejoin them and get them on. You know, they're really nice guys, really hardworking. And, you know, they're fun. You know, I like them a lot. They're fun. And they're honest, which is also good. Sometimes honesty is the best thing ever. And, of course, another shout-out to Jack and Tim, the lucky ones, the father-son duo. And, yeah, everybody else is on our roster, too. You guys all know who you guys are. Riley Simmons, by the way, over in the UK, he's also on our show. On our show alone, he's a former tag team champion and a F4L Icon champion. Riley's a terrific young man in real life as well as on the show, and emulates. He has a no-quit attitude, really positive attitude. He's a gymnast by trade, but he's a very young man in places, as all of our young people are. And, really helps and really makes me happy when I see that these people are getting the recognition they should from our show in life. And it's really cool. And the Swiss Fight Club again. And, of course, Mike, Tristan, and Robin of OK Thank You. Can't not say hi to them. And, of course, Father Son Fist Bump Podcast, who had the tag titles for a little while and then lost them to OK Thank You. And here we go again with this feud going up all over again. But, Gabe and Austin over there in Utah, hope they're doing well. They're the father-son fist bump, and I hope they're doing well. I know Austin was running for past president, I think. Well, my thing is he should just tell them and show them, you know, why he should be the thing. His slogan should be, listen, my president defeated and is the former MMA Grand Prix champion for the F4L icons of YouTube and whatnot. And a former tag team champion who knows how to work the team. Anyway, I don't know how Austin made out. I hope he did well. And, you know, he's still on our show, so is Gabe. And someday we're going to have that thing where you guys are going to come on the show or vice versa. Again, I hope you guys are doing well. I hope, okay, thank you. Mike, Tristan, Robin are doing well. I hope everyone's doing well. Of course, our Australian friend, Minty. Being Minty, I think I hit everybody in one shot. Good for me. Of course, my wife and kids, not that they ever listened, but if they ever did, shout out to them. I love them as well. Everything I do is for them in one way or the other. And Dave Hagen, Joe Bruin, all those guys, Dan Pewter, everyone else I mentioned. If I didn't mention you, you know that I love you guys too. Michael Fishman already said that. Yeah, I think that's a lot of people. And I got more people coming up, too. I'm going to be having some more people added to the roster. Some of them are people who have been on the roster before. Some people are new. And then I get some people on this podcast as well. And I'm going to start maybe this summer getting some, you know, some heavy hitters on this show. And hopefully, bring some unity back into the world. So there is that. So, that is the Talking Tuesday. That was fun, huh? I got about 19 minutes left. Sometimes I've been known to cut out early. I'm going to try to stick with you guys to the end this time. because it's been so long since I've been on the air. And again, I apologize. I had a lot of personal stuff I had to take care of. I got a new car, thankfully, that I was able to acquire. So traveling is a lot easier. I named him Lobo, because you should always name your car. Yep, Lobo's the name of my car, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, also, I'm working on some writing stuff and some movie projects. I'm also curious what people think about live play. Could I do that? And also, you know, I'm also thinking about, you know, it's been a long time since Jazz Fitness has ever been seen. I'm wondering, is the time right for Jazz Fitness, because that's one of my personas, to, I don't know, maybe come on the show and do a fitness center on the FOL headquarters? I don't know. We'll have to find out. Anyway, yeah, I guess we'll have to find out about that. But I'm going to be going on the YouTube stuff, and also in May, and I'm going to be trying to, you know, take on the Mental Health Awareness Month, and I'm going to try to see if we can get some more stigmas scraped away, maybe do some more bully busting as well. You know, I think, you know, to be honest with you, I told people I was going to be putting a YouTube video out where I was going to tell my story about growing up with mental illness. As you guys, maybe you may not know, I have PTSD, which means I have post-traumatic stress disorder. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a illness that happens, not an illness, is a condition that happens when someone has experienced such a traumatic event in their life, a traumatic memory that is embedded in their psyche for the rest of their life. It can affect them in many different ways. The other terms for it is war syndrome, soldiers syndrome, shell shock. There's been a lot of nicknames for it. Due to the fact that most people who have PTSD are people who have seen a lot of this tragedy. A lot of the people who have seen the worst are usually people in the front lines in the military, or people who are police officers, doctors, firefighters, on a regular. But that doesn't mean that that's all that gets it. Like myself, for example, I had it at a young age, and I was diagnosed, I should say, at a young age. And, you know, again, don't let other people define you. You define you. But I had told the people and you know, that I was going to be doing this video about telling my story on YouTube. I didn't realize how long it was going to be. And YouTube was like, that's too long. Cut it down. So I did. But this is my podcast. I'm thinking maybe I could tell the story here, maybe in Mental Health Awareness Month. And then maybe do a Q&A where you guys can call in if you want, and I can answer questions for you that way. I think that's probably the best idea. I don't know why I didn't think of it back then. But, I went all over for that thing. I printed out paperwork and, you know, breakdowns and everything else. I, by the way, have a degree in human services. I don't know if I mentioned that. I also have a degree in film making, like I said. Both of those things. I have that knowledge there, too. I'm looking forward to doing a lot of those projects and much, much more going on the next little while. Of course, I will be giving you guys updates on the bowling league as we are in. Every week you could have up and down night. It's all about keeping positive and going at it the next time even harder. That's what you got to do. If you take a loss, take the loss and then figure out what you're going to do to fix it next time. That's how I look at things. I think a lot of people don't like when I say that I feel that winning is fun, but losing is also an important lesson that people need. Because no one likes to lose, but there's also a good way to lose. Just like there's a way to win. You can have a sore winner, too. And that doesn't make anyone better than anyone else. So there's that. Oh, there's that. Also, I wanted to add this little tidbit out there. You know, I'm looking at the thing, I say inspiration, advice, or whatever. But I wanted to also just throw out there that I'm from an Irish heritage where most of our family, we, you know, we have a lot of, what are we called, grudges and so forth. But I myself don't, I don't really fit the mold for being always like that. I do. See, here's the thing. If I don't like someone, they just, I just don't like them. If someone wrongs me, I deem them to be people I really don't like, then I just simply don't acknowledge them, and they don't exist in my world. That's how I am. But in the same sense of that, a lot of people, you know, have little tidbits, little disagreements. And what I'm getting at here, folks, is, you know, I have, you know, had a lot of relationships in my life where, you know, I've ended a lot of friendships because out of a lot of different reasons, whether it be for the safety of my family or whatever the case may be. Sometimes you have to know when to walk away from a friendship, but also if you have an important friendship, you have a relationship that's really important to you, whether it be a relationship romantic, whether it be a best friend or a relative of some kind, if you want to make that mend and you feel deep down inside, you know, that fight was kind of dumb, things got out of hand, I really miss so-and-so, I encourage you guys to follow your heart and call the person and bury the hatchet, so to speak. I know that sounds like telling you one thing and doing another, but in the same sense, I have also done that, at least myself. My mother, for example, you know, I had a lot of reasons to be upset with my mother. She was gone for 11 years. In that 11 years, I lost my first girlfriend, my first son. I was homeless. You know, I had to go through high school alone. I had to, you know, all those other things. I went to wrestling school. Everything else I had overcome. But you know what? I was still able to, you know, forgive her before her end. And that's something that I feel better about. At least she knew that I loved her, and I knew that she loved me. And I was able to make that mend while I had her. And the moral of my story is, with that goes, is, you know, if you want to fix something, the time is now. If you want to wait tomorrow or next week, because you may not have that opportunity to say the things you want. And that's kind of where I'm getting at. It's always important to say how you truly feel about anything. In the F4L, we tell people we love each other because we do. Brothers and sisters and so forth or whatever. We love people because we do love you. We love you. We care about you. We understand you. We respect you. And we accept and respect your differences. So, you know, that being said, you know, never think you're weak because you, you know, say you're sorry, for example, if you know you were wrong. Or in the same sense, if someone hurt you, I think it's important you acknowledge that and have a civilized conversation with that person. I don't encourage going out and fighting. That's not what I'm encouraging at all. I'm saying it's always important to say how you feel when you can to the people you can at the moment, because you might not have that opportunity again. There are supposed friends I had in the past that I wish at times I could see them so I could tell them how much they hurt me back in the day and how it makes me happy that I have gotten where I am on my own and that they, I don't know, are not part of my life. That makes me happy. And I think it's also important, like when you're in relationships like that, to know when to walk away. I am a little embarrassed that I let some friendships go as long as I did because of the, well, part of the reason being I'm the F4L and I believe so strongly in the F4L model that your friends are your family. And once someone becomes F4L, they're F4L for life. That's how it works. Your brothers, your sisters now. But I've had the families. I've had relationships where I've allowed friendships to go along longer than they should have. And then sometimes I've been friends with people, and I didn't even know why I was friends with these people. I couldn't explain how I became friends with people. And then, you know, it's never a good way to be. So always do that. But also know that it's always important to say how you feel when you can to the people you can. And if you're in a relationship where you're not feeling the friendship, tell them, hey, listen, I think it's time we take a break. It happens. Maybe you want to give it a couple weeks and give it, or a month or two, or a year or two, and come back again, maybe. I've done that too. The greatest thing about, you know, things like that is you can always have another chance as long as you have. But if you don't take those chances when you can, then it's a wasted opportunity. You have to accept what you can, and you have to make whatever you can happen when you can. You have to achieve whatever you can while you are able to. Something you want to do in life, you find a way to do it. Just know that there's no dream that you can do that's just going to automatically happen. There's nothing you want that magically will just appear, you know, in your future just because you want it. You have to actually put your work in and really, you know, put the work in and put the, you know, gear to the metal and make it happen. You don't wake up and become a doctor. You got to go to med school for a long time to become a doctor. You don't become a lawyer overnight. Is being a parent a thing for everybody? Not necessarily. Sometimes you got to examine yourself. Do you really want kids? Are you equipped for that? Because when you're a parent, that's your job. No matter what, that's your job. My kids are my life. And, well, as I've been Lobo now for a few times, and I can't tell you how many times in the last couple of weeks I've been tired from the long day of working or whatever I'm doing. But the minute my kids say, hey, I need a ride, I'm there. I don't even question it. I didn't say, oh, well, let me see. No, my kids need something, I'm there. And that's kind of what you need. They can know that they can help me whenever they need me. And also know I'll show up. So there's that. So anywhere out there, again, keep you guys safe. If you got parents out there, be parents and be proud of your parents. Being a parent is, you know, one of the most underrated jobs, I have to say. A lot of people put a lot of people say like a doctor is the greatest job or, you know, whatever. Being a parent is the hardest job you'll ever do. You're not going to get a lot of thanks for it, but you're making a difference. And whether you know it or not, you're responsible for the formation of the rest of the future of the world, whether you like it or not. Because it's your kids who are going to be running the world after we're done. So there's that. So just remember, folks. You know, nothing's easy, and if you want something bad enough, you have to put your work in to get it. If you have a relationship with a family, you got to work for that too. If you want respect, guess what? In a world where a lot of people will assume because you're older that you are just given or entitled to respect, I am a firm believer that you earn respect, just like trust. That's something you earn. You don't just give it away. It's not something you just give away, like friendship. Because to me, friendship's like is a brotherhood. It's a family member. So, you know, these are important things that you should always acknowledge and understand at all times. So, there you have it. I think I hit every little tagline I had on my little, what am I going to talk about today? And I didn't write the notes down. Good for me. I wasn't going to. Well, I got about 5 minutes left, folks, so what I'm just going to let you guys know, if you need to get a hold of me, you want to, you know, reach out and have some ideas for the wrestling show, you want to come on the podcast ahead of time, you can feel free to reach out to me on my email. It is dreammatches@gmail.com. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at F4L Hold on one second. I always get this wrong. And I want to make sure I give you guys the correct information. Thank you very much. All righty then. You guys can reach out to me and find me at F4L. That's all lowercase letters. S-E-A-N-J-A-Z. That's F4L, Sean, S-E-A-N, Jazz, J-A-Z-Z, S-T-W. That is on Instagram, or you can find me at Sean, S-E-A-N, Jazz, J-A-Z-Z, Stevens, S-T-E-V-E-N-S, on Twitter. Yeah. So Instagram is F4L, Sean Jazz, S-T-W, on Instagram, or Twitter at Wow at Sean Jazz Stevens. And of course on YouTube, you can always find this at the same place as my email at Wow Dream Matches. And of course you can run right here again, email WOWDREAMMATCH Wow Dream Matches at gmail.com. All righty. And, of course, whenever we have guests come on, the guest number here is always 516-453-9380. In the meantime, folks, I am going to let you guys go. It is late, and I hope you guys are all safe. I hope you guys have a great rest of the week. And I am going to be back later on this week with the return of TGIF4L weekend kickoff, which we'll have to see what happens there, and much, much more. We'll be seeing you here right back here left week for Talking Tuesday as we open the headquarters. Hopefully we'll have a guest. In the meantime, everyone, may all your dreams come true. I am the leader of the F4L, Sean Jeff Stevens, saying good night, and may all your dreams come true. Keep safe. Peace.